The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Sari Gametha.
And I'm Robert Barncard. Stay tuned now for an interview with solar energy activist and entrepreneur Danny Kennedy. Good night, Sarika.
Good night, Robert.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Tonight is the annual dinner for the environmental nonprofit Climate Solutions, an Olympia-based group with an office here in Portland. The keynote speaker will be Danny Kennedy, a solar energy activist, entrepreneur, and author, who is currently the managing director of the California Clean Energy Fund. Kennedy is one of the co-founders and longtime president of Sungevity, a leading solar power company which has been involved in a number of campaigns to increase the usage and the acceptance of solar power around the world, including the White House campaign. He's also been on the board of solar companies and utilities in the developing world and helped found the SFUN Cube, now known as Powerhouse, which is an incubator for solar power startups. He is also the author of Rooftop Revolution, How Solar Power Can Save Our Economy and Our Planet from Dirty Energy. KBOO reporter Sam Bowman spoke with Mr. Kennedy this afternoon in downtown Portland.
So as part of Sungevity, you were involved, among other activities, in trying to get solar panels on the White House,
yeah.
For example. We did installed some in the Maldives.
Yeah. And, for the president, Nasheed, who's now in jail. Sadly.
Yeah.
Great guy.
And
it's been a week in his attic.
Oh,
crawling around wiring the solar system.
How did the solar panels on the White House campaign play out?
Well, back in 2008, when Obama was elected, I was invited to an event at the Rose Garden to honor Dennis Hayes, actually, of Bullitt Foundation fame now, but one of the really early proponents of solar in America, started something called the Solar Electric Research Institute, which became NREL, the National Research Energy Laboratory. Mm-hmm. And Dennis was being honored at the White House, and I thought, here's an opportunity to suggest that we put solar back on the White House, because Jimmy Carter had done it and then Reagan had taken it off, because this was not a technology befitting a superpower, was the famous quote. So I went to the thing with the head of the Solar Energy Industry Association, a guy called Roan Resch, and I'd created a quote with the White House and a mock-up of where the panels would go and the whole deal, and a, you know, presentation of what a no-money-down solar lease would cost the first family or the taxpayer. And in the queue to meet the president, I kind of got all nervous, got my little paper out and presented it to him, said, you should put solar back in the White House. And he said, that's a great idea. Let's do that. Which was sort of surprising, kind of shocked me, and pointed us to his team. And we went into like a year and a half of discussion and negotiation with the General Services Administration and others. But then Solyndra happened, leading up to the 2012, well, it was 2011, really, when that started percolating for the 2012 election. It kind of basically squashed the whole enthusiasm in the White House to do it, because they just didn't want to talk about solar. And the moment passed, including the arrangement we had, and that was a shame. And to their credit, after they won the second term, they did it, but they did it with a different contractor. But you know, it was just good to see them do it. And you know, what I didn't say was, in between sort of yes we should and actually committing to do it, there was a whole lot of people power stuff in the streets, the Globama campaign, it was called, 350.org, and a whole lot of pressure around the White House to make sure that they did actually do what they said they did.
How do you think the political climate is changing, for better or for worse, as far as solar goes and sort of government support for it?
it's a mixed bag, federally and at state level and different states across the union. But it's kind of irrelevant to a certain degree. I mean, that's not to say it's not important to have the right policies and mandates and signals, more from the people again, the demand. You know, things like this renewable portfolio standard here could be really important in setting the market goal. But the economics are really what's driving it. And, you know, so this year and last, solar has been growing gangbusters while almost all other technology sets are sort of flat or down.
And as far as the outside of politics, in terms of just the market and homeowners or businesses trying to go solar on their own, what do you see as the cutting edge in this right now as far as funding?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is around financial innovation. You know, I think key to solar adoption has been taking it from this kind of CapEx to an OpEx model, where, you know, it used to be you'd buy your electricity for 20 years up front by buying a solar system or, you know, some technology set. And now we tend to amortize that cost through some sort of financial product like the solar lease in the residential space or the power purchase agreement with utility scale. And what that means is that you get electricity kind of like you do from the wall, pay as you go, rather than pay up front. And that makes it a lot more palatable to most end users. So financial innovations are really key. We kind of know what they are. It's actually just scaling them and increasing what's called flow of capital, the kind of timeliness, cost, and consistency of the forms of capital. And that's where policy can be really important, actually. So, you know, less about, you know, a mandate or subsidy, perhaps, and more about, can we just get the rules set and straight and know that there won't be any changes and certainty so that the market can grow and evolve into a certain set of rules. As an example of that, the tax credit, which is threatening to go away at the end of next year, you know, the fossil fuel guys have had 100 years of tax credits, literally since 1913, in fact, so more now. No questions asked. Wind and solar have constantly had to struggle with their tax credits being on again, off again. And that's very hard to plan a business under and to grow a business with, because you don't have any of that market certainty, and your financiers are always like wondering what the impact's going to be.
Today, the Portland City Council is voting on whether or not fossil fuel infrastructure should be encouraged
in the city,
within city limits. And that also comes as the Keystone XL failed so far. The trend seems to be that companies like TransCanada, other tar sands and Bakken companies are going to want to move things through the Pacific Northwest. Do you think that any sort of fossil fuel development should be encouraged?
No, I don't. I think we're well past the point. And the good news is I think most of the world's going to realize that. And whether or not that's conscious or unconscious, they are moving away rapidly from fossil fuels. So I think it's great the Portland City Council wants to send that signal and say, we're a city of the future. We're not a city of the past. We're not clinging on to some broken model. And that's very important to say. And they're with, you know, the world community, really. I mean, it's not just tar sands and KXL. It's the Chinese are peaking coal. Like, you know, this year, all countries but India are basically decreasing their coal consumption year to date. Coal consumption is down about 5%, in fact, till September. We're doing it. We're doing what we need to do. We're effectively decoupling economic activity from carbon production globally. That happened last year for the first time in a non-recessionary year. That's going to be a greater number this year, the distance between the two. It's not enough yet to stave off the worst of climate change, but we're on the path, and we just need to double down on that and get down the road faster.
I know that you have been or are currently on the board of, for example, PowerHive, which is a utility in Kenya, and Sunergize, which is
Pacific.
A solar company in, based out of Fiji, I believe.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how they function in those different jurisdictions?
Sure, and you know, also the change that they represent. I think something people don't realize is there's more people on Earth today that don't have electricity than there were on Earth when Edison and Insull started rolling out electricity. And there's going to be more still. And so there's this massive build-out of electricity that's going to happen in the next couple decades. And it's either going to be dirty or going to be clean. The good news is it looks like it's going to be clean on the economics. I mean, and on the jobs, and on other rational reasons, and because that won't kill our children.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, it's pretty good reckoning to say that we'll leapfrog Africa, which has 300 million people without electricity today, into electricity service without going through dirty energy central station models, just as they went from not having telephony service to having a cell phone per human on the continent. And likewise, parts of Asia, Pacific, Caribbean, and other places, they'll go there. So these business models that I'm backing as a board member and investor and whatever are ways to test that path and work it out, really. Mm-hmm. And they will scale and they will become giant businesses.
A bit more personal a little bit. I can speak for a lot of probably KBOO's listeners and members who are involved in a lot of activism around things like this. And you yourself started as a Greenpeace activist in Australia. Can you just tell a little bit about how you went from, as to put it probably not the best way, but from the lower rungs to the upper rungs of the environmental movement? That's
not the best way. No,
not at all.
Gone downslope, really. You know, I think it's a social change theory that I'm following, which is that all social movements have basically gone from needing to prove there's a problem to actually convincing everyone that you got a problem and that the current establishment or the power holders of the day don't have the answer to that problem, and then demonstrating what the answer is.
Yeah.
And if you think about climate and energy, we've kind of done that. The US Senate aside, the world knows we've got weird weather happening, knows we've got a problem, knows business as usual, burning fossil fuels ain't going to cut it going forward. They've started to realize these bastards do not have our back. You know, the powers that be in government, in the Saudi royal family, the Koch brothers, and others are not representing our self-interest. So they get that they've got to make change and make it themselves. And what the social movement needs now is demonstrations of that. So every business to me is a campaign. It's like, how do you now solve the niche that is residential solar in middle America? Because if Mrs. Jones goes solar, then that's very likely that Mr. Jones will go solar too at his beach house, or that the family will vote for it because they've been touched by it and benefited from it. How do you do it in Fiji and Papua New Guinea? How do you do it in Africa in order to demonstrate that it can be done? Mm-hmm. And you know, like I say, this is actually classic social movement form to have entrepreneurs and small businesses start to build the things that are needed or do the behaviors that are needed in the social movement. Civil rights had this manifest by businesses that were willing to desegregate, for example. So we need those businesses now. Entrepreneuring is actually social activism of a kind.
What is SFUN's fund?
Sfuncube. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that, the incubator?
Sure. It's actually been renamed because no one could pronounce it. It's really funny, but Sfun is Solar for Universal Need, which is the sort of vision statement that we started Sungevity with.
Okay.
And wanted to build towards that with our own piece of it, mission in our company. And so all our staff call themselves Sfunsters, and we have Sfun, and we do Sfun things, and it's funny. Not. And so when we spun out an incubator, which was really kind of a happenstance, we had some spare space, some people came and said, we're trying to do what you've done in a different market, can you help? We did. We gave them space, I joined their board, we got them some money, whatever. That became a formalized incubator and accelerator program for these startups. And that now is its own thriving business. And one of the things that the world needs now is entrepreneurs to take this mantle up. Because if you think about the value creation story, when you go to the world and take electricity to these billions that don't yet have it, or you rewire America or Japan or Europe with renewables, which we will do over the decades to come, that's work. That's companies. That's companies with, you know, household names and scales of Google and Apple and stuff, to be honest. And that means entrepreneurs to get them going. And you know, what we're trying to do is foster them at the very nascent stage and find them and support them to succeed.
So lastly, why are you here today?
Love the work. I've admired for a long time Climate Solutions and how the Northwest really has been like a beacon of light during some pretty dark years in the States. I think there's, you know, not a lot of places that have consistently, from Seattle down through Portland, been like leaders on renewable policy, on energy efficiency, on all the best ways to achieve this, on the kind of blue-green alliance piece, which I think is critical, that this takes care of the workers and takes care of just transitions for people impacted by this great energy transition we're undertaking. And, you know, I believe California is also an exemplar of that. That's one of the reasons I'm there and now working for the California Clean Energy Fund. But I'm just happy to be here to throw down and support Climate Solutions.
All right. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman, speaking with solar energy activist, author, and entrepreneur Danny Kennedy ahead of the Climate Solutions annual dinner in downtown Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is currently hiring for two positions. We are hiring a membership director. This is a part-time position, 32 hours per week, $15.11 per hour. We're also hiring a PM News and Public Affairs Director. This is a salary full-time position paying $31,400 a year. The full job descriptions and instructions for applying can be found on our website on the homepage on the right-hand side under News from the Boo. That's at kboo.fm on the homepage, right-hand side, under News from the Boo. Applications are due Friday, November 20th at 5 p.m.
Your community radio station is having a book and record sale. Saturday, November 14th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., the annual KBOO Book and Record Sale will be at the Milagro Theater, 525.